You've got a long gospel lesson and not a terribly short Old Testament lesson, so let's get cracking here. Isaiah chapter 12. I don't know if I'd put this quite in the first tier of great biblical texts, but pretty close to it, and one that doesn't get a lot of press, though it should, if for any number of reasons, one of which is the question of literary structure. We're here at the end of really the first chunk of Isaiah, which is generally called 1 to 12. I happen to believe it's 2 to 12, that 1 is kind of a prologue to the whole book. And this brings to conclusion a lot of the themes in chapters 2 to 12, one theme of which is the fact that God's anger is stretched out, kindled against his people, and his hand is stretched out still. That's that refrain that you have four times in chapters 9, 8 through 10, 4, which is clearly four stanzas of a poem, each of them in with that refrain. And all this, his anger is not turned away, his hand is outstretched still. So that's a major theme here about his anger being turned away. Now we get to chapter 12, and we have sort of a canticle here at the end of all of these judgments motifs of really judgment, both against Israel and against Judah, and in the previous chapters against Assyria, and in chapter 11 turning to the restoration of a kind of new creation motifs. This is the wolf and the lamb lying down together in chapter 11. So you've got kind of the whole counsel of God here in terms of judgment against his people, judgment against all nations, restoration of all the earth. And now chapter 12 brings the whole thing to climax, if you will, to culmination in this beautiful psalm of praise. And it is a psalm divided into two halves. You'll notice that verse 1 starts, V'amarta b'yom ha'hu, and you will say in that day. And again, I think this that day is somewhat significant as an eschatological motif. And look at verse 4, starts out, V'amartem b'yom ha'hu, and you will say in that day. You'll notice that the yous are different. In 1, it's singular, in 4, it's plural. And that's one of the motifs in this song where you sort of bounce back and forth between the singular and the plural, between the individual and the corporate, in terms of our own life and worship and praise. So verse 1, you will say by Yom HaHu in that day, O Deka Yahweh, ki anafta bi. Well, some great forms to parse here. O Deka. Beginning Hebrew guys, you should at least be able to make a stab at this. This is Hifil, imperfect. See the aleph prefix with a wow means it's a first yod. So your root is yod. The second root letter is daleth. You want to guess at the third root letter that isn't there? Third hey. Yada in the Hifil means to give thanks, praise. I will praise, note the object suffix glued onto the back of the verb. Akah, I will praise you, O Yahweh. I think Yahweh has to be vocative here. Ki anafta. Anaf is the word for a word for anger, wrath. For you have been, kal perfect, or were, angry, be, we'd say at me. Hebrew says in me. Yashov. Now here's a great form to parse. If you were paying attention in class, you should be able to parse Yashov as Kal what? It's not Yashuv, though the root is Shuv. It's not V'yashov, which is while consecutive, but it's that form in between. It's Jussef. Now, I don't know any commentary or translation that takes this as a Jussef. The footnote suggests simply adding a wow to it and reading it as while consecutive, which makes very good sense. You have been angry at me, and your anger has returned. That means gone back to you and is no longer at me. All right, your anger has returned. And this is precisely this theme of the anger returning that I mentioned in the introductory remarks. Well, if this is second person and somewhat of a prayer, I think you can certainly argue that this should be yet a Jussef, in which case it's translated almost as a wish. May your anger be turned against me. Now, I like this for sort of isagogical reasons, too, turned away from me, because this implies that the restoration is still future, you see. He's sort of still in the thick of it, and this is much more of a wish or a hope than it is a statement of past action. And you'll also notice that, well, the verb, the last verb here, utinachmeni, the wow there is not wow consecutive. Now, if v'yashuv was wow consecutive, then you should follow it with another wow consecutive. And the Masoretes have this pointed as a not wow consecutive, which would imply that this imperfect could also be jussive. So now you got two jussives. May your anger return, and may you have comfort, mercy. Nacham, we just had this in Hebrew. Nacham in the P-A-L, note the P-A-L here with virtual doubling. May you have comfort on me. Note the object suffix, any. The noun af, you probably know. This is often cited as the word for nose that becomes the word for anger. And it's got a nun in the middle of it. Did you know that? The nun, you never see it because it's assimilated into the pay. But if you go back to the verb in the first half of the line, you see that the verb to be angry is anaf. There the nun is a radical. Verse 2, Hine el Yeshuathi. Look, behold. Now most translators take this as third person. Behold the God of my Yeshua. Yeshua is a noun here, from the noun Yashah, to save. Yeshua means salvation. Behold the God of my salvation. I would like to argue that you could make this vocative again, since the Yahweh in the previous line is vocative. Behold, O God of my salvation. Look, he's calling attention. I will trust, and not I will pekad. Pekad means to fear. I will trust, and not will I fear. Ki ozi v'zimrat Yahweh. Now this is a direct quote of Exodus 15. And one of those times where you realize that Exodus 15 was remembered, probably liturgically, and here pops up as a citation. How do we translate this? Because my uz is the noun for strength, zimrath is almost always translated song, and is probably wrong. Zimrath in Old Hebrew means strength. We know this from Akkadian, where you have the divine name in the middle bronze period, Zimri Lim. And Zimri Lim means God Lim, that's a divine name, is my strength. Zamar means strength. And that's at least closer to Exodus 15, chronologically. And in poetic parallelism, it's a much better parallel to Uz, which means strength. What happens is somewhere between late bronze and Iron 1, Zamar takes on the meaning of sing. And it becomes a word for song. And that's certainly used by the time of Isaiah. But this is kind of, I think, a frozen phrase, going back to Exodus 15, where it should also be translated, my strength and my strength, or some other word, is Yah. And note the short form of Yah here. Now again, there's a problem here because you got this Yah Yahweh. Here's my explanation of it to get right to the bottom line. I think he's quoting Exodus 15 back to God. He's saying, because, God, you know this, I know this, but let me say it one more time. Aziv Azimrath Yah, O Yahweh. So you have to kind of put a quote within a quote here. And that explains the double use of Yah Yahweh. There's a quote mark between them. And again, commentators would much rather throw this out. If you add both of these as divine names, then of course you get seven divine names in Isaiah chapter 12, which is a nice number to have in a well-worked poetic piece. And again, I would argue that these are well-worked poetic pieces. I didn't tell you this at the beginning, But if you divide this into the two obvious halves of verses 1 to 3 and verses 4 to 6, there's 72 syllables in 1 to 3, there's 72 syllables in 4 to 6. This can't be completely by accident. If you throw ya out, now you're one syllable off. See? If you throw Yahweh out, you're two syllables off. My strength and my song is Yahweh, or my strength, no, I did it. My strength and my power is Yahweh, is Yah, O Yahweh. And again, now quoting back to Exodus 15, this Vayhi li Yeshua, and he has been to me for Yeshua, which to be to someone is the idiom for become, and he has become my salvation. That he would be quoting Exodus 15 here should not be lost, you see, that this is, again, an appeal to the Exodus motif, as the God who delivers them from the hands of their enemies and their slavery. And frankly, that was very real in the 8th century, the last half of the 8th century, having seen Samaria be taken away to Assyria and having the Assyrians then on the doorstep of Jerusalem. But now verse 3, which is really the last part, the last line of the first part, already shifts gears to the plural. Do you see this? Again, English translations would never call this to your attention. Now we shift to the plural, and it's sort of the response of this personal expression. You now have a plural addressed. And you all, y'all, verse 3, and you all will, sha'av, this is the word for lift water out of a well. And you usually translated draw, though it doesn't mean with pencil and paper. You will draw water, mayim, b'sason. Sason means joy, one of a large wortschaft of words for joy. You will draw water in joy, from the, these are wells. It's actually the word for eye, if you're paying attention. Ayin here means well, or spring, better, spring. It's a place where the earth sheds tears, I guess, or at least creates wetness. From the wells of the Yeshua. How many times can he use Yeshua here? From the wellsprings of salvation. 4, and you will say, now note the you continues to be plural, Bayom Hahu, Hodu. Now it's the imperative, sort of addressed reciprocally, the many saying to the many. But you'll notice that's the same word as Odeka in the second line. I will praise. Hodu is the imperative of the same form. Again, Hifil imperative, first Yod, Yada. Praise Yahweh, here the Lamed indicates the give praise to Yahweh. Kir'u, call imperative, call out b'shemo. Bob, what's b'shemo? In shemo, in his name. Hodi'u. Boy, this would be great for a little Hebrew quiz, wouldn't it? Hodi'u, parse this one. We've just had all these hifils, right? Another hifil, yada, first yod goes to wow. It could be perfect. It could be imperative. These forms overlap with first yod roots. Continuing the imperative, cause to know. You get the sense of the hifil here. Literally, cause someone to know, or perhaps secondarily, make known. Cause to someone else to know could be cause to be known or make known. Ba'amim, in the amim, in the people's nations outside of Israel, outside of Judah, in the whole world. Cause to know in among the nations, alilothal, his alilas. This is a word for deeds, actions. Alal is a verb that means to do something. So make known in among the nations, the peoples, his deeds. Hazkiru, same form. Here you actually have a regular verb form. Zakar, hifil. See the A vowel? That confirms that this is imperative. Hazkiru, cause someone to remember. cause to remember, or you can almost slip into a passive, cause to be remembered, that nisgav shemo. Nisgav, want to try your hand at parsing that? Nifal, we just did nifal, right? Nifal, participle, see the nun, see the comments of sagav, which means to raise, or in the nifal, to be high. Noun is shemo. Cause to remember that his name is exalted. Zamru, parse that. Zamru, pl, imperative, note the a vowel, of the verb zamar. Now here's the same root, but here's zamar is being used in an 8th century meaning, not a late bronze meaning, and probably means sing, since that's the sense of the fact that this is a psalm. You know, the one of the words for psalms is mizmor. Mizmor, which is the noun from this root, which clearly means song or psalm. Sing or praise, probably something like that. Praise Yahweh, ki ge'uth asa, because ge'uth asa, he has done. Ge'uth is more of an adverb here for majestic or wonderful. I would translate this because he has done majestically as an adverb. Now, look at this one. You want to parse the next form? Mu or me. Notice there isn't even a vowel there. The scribes gave up on this one. This is a good, if you're getting into hermeneutics, I don't know if you've got this far yet, but sooner or later you at least learn about kathiv and karay. You see in the left margin, we'll take 30 seconds here to look at this form. In the left margin, there's a little kof with a dot above it, and above that is written the same word, except that the second letter is a wow. All right, this is what the Masoretic scribes thought this word should be, that the yod is a scribal mistake for a wow. So that you should translate it mu da'at. Now that would make it the huf'al participle, which is the passive of the hif'il. And that has a lot to commend it. As it stands, the yod would force this to be a little bit more of a regular verb form, in which the case the main preformative should be d-stem, either pl or pu'al, and that's the kathiv. You see in the footnote, if you go down to footnote A, it's the last item on the page, the big K means kathiv, that is to say this is what's written, and then they point it for you according to the consonants that are written, mi, yu, da'at, pu'al. Now, this is an interesting problem, one like many of these that doesn't have to be solved, because whether you take this as pu'al or hafal, they're both passive conjugations, and this participle means something like being made known. I think the scribes are right that this is supposed to be a hifil on the principle of the easier reading, simply because you've had the bicolon starts in the previous line with the hifil of yada, cause to know. It would be great for the bicolon to end with the hafal, the passive of the hifil. Caused to be known, this. This is caused to be known, b'kol ha'aretz, in all the earth. Again, the translation is really the least of your problems here. 6. Zahali, shout for joy. It's one of these joy words. Now note this imperative is feminine singular. So we've had, you know, how many different subjects have we had? We've had second singular, we've had second plural. We've had first singular, now we have, then we had imperatives, and now we have an imperative addressed to a singular feminine. This is a good example of principle number 2 in why you should read through the text in Hebrew. It at least slows you down so that you notice stuff like this. I mean, I've read this chapter in English 1,000 times and never noticed all of those changes until you kind of go, gee, why is that? Well, why is it? Shout out loud and shout ranan, same form. The subject or the object of the imperative, the addressee, is Yosheveth Tzion. Yosheveth is the feminine participle. O inhabiting one, O resident. Now, when it's feminine, it probably doesn't mean the person, but this is not a construct chain, but what I would call an epexegetical appositive. Ooh, write that down, Jim. Did you get that? O inhabitant, i.e. Zion. Zion, who is sort of the place where the sum total of God's people dwelling on earth. O inhabitant Zion, ki gadol bekerbeik, because big, b, in your feminine, kerev. Kerev means midst, because great in your midst is Kadosh Yisrael, the Holy One of Yisrael. And here you have this majestic Isaianic title for Yahweh as the Holy One of Israel. That this poem has moved from all these motifs of judgment, which is really the dominant motif in chapters 2 to 12, to one of praise, because Yahweh is now a God to be praised. His anger has turned away. We can rejoice and make known what he has done. And in the end, he is great in the midst of his people. It should give you some food for thought. Now, I'm not sure what this has to do with Lent. This would be a great Easter hymn, and maybe a reminder, and you can certainly do this liturgically, that the Sundays, remember, are Sundays in Lent, but not of Lent, and that Sunday is always, even in the midst of the Passion season, a reminder of Easter. If you want to celebrate Lent, that's really why you go to church on Wednesdays. They are in Lent. They are of Lent. But Sundays are only in Lent. Okay, we better get to the gospel.